Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to my show. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher, and I'm so glad you're able to join us today. We will be talking about another topic on health, about your breath awareness. Goodness, do we even want to even know what that even entails? I know what I think about my breath or breathing is one thing. Another person may think something different, and still another person may not even know what we're talking about, and they're like, oh my goodness, you know, I do it every day, I don't have to think about it, I'm not going to focus on it, whatever. So that's what we are going to be focusing on today, your breath and your breathing and the awareness and what it actually can do for you and why it is really so important to maybe think about this in stress reduction or focus or even how to meditate. Let me tell you about meditation. Everybody thinks, oh, I'm supposed to do it. I just sit here. I light a little candle. Hey, I'm good to go. Right. Okay, that's how you meditate. Here's how I started out meditating, just to give you a great example. Sit down. They said, okay, we want you to close your eyes and not think of anything. Immediately in my mind, I started running off this list of everything I had to do when I was finished. So how can I not think of anything? And then they said, focus your mind. I said, okay, focus. And then I started spelling the word, F-O-C-U-S. I figured if I focus on the word, I started spelling it. What does it look like? What color is it? I couldn't get my mind to stop. So I really think today will be a really great introduction and maybe how we can just focus and maybe clear some of that mind chatter that keeps going on and on, that when we're not meditating, it really can impact our lives and our health. So today, my guest is Heidi Thompson. She is the author of a book, Calm, Focus, and Joy, The Power of Breath Awareness. And this is a guide for adults and children. Super important. I know I grew up in the 70s and 80s, and it was like, hey, kids, go out and do your own thing. But now, a lot of the parents are learning these techniques on meditation and eating better and taking care of your kids and spending more focus on your kids when they're growing up. And they are taking them to yoga classes, and they're taking them to meditation classes, and kids are learning how to sit down and just be quiet and peaceful with themselves. And wouldn't that be super great if we could do that without medications? Because we all know there's one culture that loves those little pills, because instant gratification. But if you look on the other side, there's others who love the long-term benefits. So I'd like to welcome to the show Heidi.
Hello. Here I am.
Hi, Heidi.
Hello.
Hi, how are you?
I'm very good, and thank you for having me.
Great. And you know, I always say I'm from the South, and today is going to be hot and raining like nobody's business. Yesterday it rained in 10 minutes, and we had 4 inches, and the roads were flooded to the houses. And you're in a nice cold climate, right?
Nice and cold, and yesterday we had snow flurries for some reason.
Oh, goodness, goodness, you know, the big diversity, and you're not even, I mean, granted we're far away, but we're not on the other side of the world either, so you could see the changes in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Heidi, if you could tell us a little bit about yourself and how you even started to work with this idea of breathing and breath awareness and why it's even important to you.
I would love to. I'll just do a quick background story. I was a middle child, and I was kind of neglected. Not that my parents didn't love me. I just sort of fell through the cracks, and I kind of had to do things on my own. And being an artist, I was very emotional and had a sort of a deep inner life. I was introspective. And when I was 17, I left home because I wasn't really – I was looking for something. And I went to Europe for 7 or 8 years. And I studied painting. And during this time, I went through a lot of ups and downs, a very emotional time, and I was seeking something to help me through emotions, sadness, loneliness. I loved what I was doing, but I still had to deal with those feelings. And I landed on meditation. And I'd actually, for a few years, tried different techniques. And I ended up finding and discovering, it was a discovery, this one very, very simple technique, which I learned when I was about 28. And I've been doing it ever since, and it has helped me in every situation, every high and every low, helped me keep balance, helped me make big decisions in my life. And then I decided I would try to help my daughter and help other children, and I started programs in schools to teach this one technique, and that's what I've been doing. And then I wrote a book a year ago because I wanted more adults and teachers to learn the technique in such a way that they can teach children. And that's my whole goal and focus. It's my mission in life is to share this simple, simple method.
So pretty much you learned it when a lot of us in our 50s and 60s, and that would be when it was around in 1970s and 80s, right?
That's right. And this particular technique came to North America in the early 70s. I learned it in the early 80s, and I was probably lucky to go to one of the first few courses that were offered in the United States. And I feel very fortunate that they were teaching this technique, and the beauty of what they were teaching was it was always for free. So I had an aversion to paying for things. And
right.
So it had that purity that I was seeking in a meditation technique. And that drew me into it. And it was very, very intense to learn. But once you learn it, it's there for life.
Yes, and I think that is absolutely true, because a lot of people who grew up in, you know, 70s and 80s, we're now in our 50s and 60s, that's kind of very important to able to get us to this point where, let's say, you know, in your 50s and 60s, and then in the last few years, we had all these financial issues, and we had all these life issues, and now there's a lot of health issues.
Mm-hmm.
But I can find that a lot of my clients who were in their 50s, 60s, and 70s are going back to how they used to be. They're going back to more peaceful life, more centered life, a simpler life. And that's really, really important that they share that with their children who are
right.
now in their 30s and 40s or their grandchildren.
Mm-hmm.
So as you have said, you know, this can also work for children. So, you know, maybe grandparents are teaching children.
Yeah, grandparents do make good teachers. Very good
right,
teachers.
Because... Right, and if you've already been there and if you've already said, you know, it doesn't have to be this crazy way. You don't have to have 100 things scheduled for today and make sure that I've got you as a child scheduled from the time you get out of your feet on the floor to the time your feet get off the floor, you know.
Right.
And it's so easy, you know, to get tied up in that. And how do you really help children?
Yes, I can go into sort of more about the technique and what breath awareness is.
That would be wonderful.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
My book is called The Power of Breath Awareness. And when you do this technique, you regain your power. You actually feel strong. You feel more confident. You become very creative. Your relationships get better because you're more peaceful inside. So it has a great power. And the technique works by training your attention. So it's a very simple technique, training that part of your brain, that most important, I would call it the, you know, the executive function of your brain. It is what rules your life, makes decisions, helps you get over habits. You need a strong attention. And in school, we need to teach the children how to develop their attention. You can put math and spelling and science aside and say, we're going to practice training your brain so you can focus better, and then all those other things will be so much easier to learn. So that's the key, is to understand that we have that muscle in our brain. It's been let loose right now. We don't have control over it because of our wired society. We're so distracted with television and radios and phones and entertainment that we don't practiced developing that muscle. We've let it gone weak, and now we're suffering ADHD and attention problems. We're suffering health problems because we end up letting our habits take over our life. And that's just a sort of subconscious thing. So what we want to do is get very, very focused, and then we can take control of every aspect of our life.
You know, I think so many times with kids, when you do have a downtime as an adult, and maybe the perfect example, like when a hurricane came and where we live here in Louisiana, and the parents said, my kids are driving me crazy. It's because all of the other influences that the kids were partaking in every day and the parents were, that has been taken away. And the parents were able to quiet themselves down, but the kids weren't.
Mm.
I mean, they were still running on, you know, ethylene fuel, you know. They were just, like, supercharged.
Right.
And they could not get at all, not even down a decibel. So pretty much you think about it as, you know, I'm running this car on this super leaded fuel, and all of a sudden I've got to put water in there because I don't have any more money left, and it's like it's not going to go, you know. It just doesn't. Things just don't want to work. And how do you do that? You know, how do you say, stop running around, sit, you know?
Right.
So if you could just lead us, like, well, we have about a half an hour, we can do this, you know, several different examples about how. Let's just walk through it. You know, you've got a kid running around that room. How do you do that? Stop him, you know?
Well, we'll back up a bit, because once you've got the big problem, it's harder to solve. We'll start with prevention, and then we'll work how to deal with your everyday problems. So
perfect.
The prevention is to develop the brain, and that starts from the day the baby's born. We've got this undeveloped brain. It's an amazingly big brain in the beginning. And then we want to give the child important things like nursing and family time so that the brain gets used to a calm and peaceful and focused environment. And that will actually change the brain. If parents knew that they were shaping the child's brain right from the day they were born, the responsibility there is huge. We don't realize that we're actually shaping the brain so that the child will adapt to its environment. So just knowing that we're in charge of how our brain is shaped is the beginning. So the more we can introduce focusing activities with the children in the beginning, whether it's a longer conversation or story time or drawing and painting, those types of activities are walking through the forest. They develop the brain in the right way. And as the child grows up, if they keep doing these activities that take longer and longer attention spans, they develop a longer attention span. So by the time they're an adult, they can choose to do something. It might be a little difficult, but they have the focus to get through the obstacles to get to the long-term reward. And all relationships require that ability to go through the ups and downs for that long-term reward, you know, that one nice reward you get in the end. So this is what we're striving towards. And we're doing kind of everything wrong right now. We're introducing a diet that makes the child hyperactive and also doesn't feed the brain. So we're not feeding the brain that we're trying to shape. So the first thing we need to do is do a little research, and every parent needs to become a little bit of a researcher now. You can't trust your pharmaceutical companies. You can't trust even your doctors. You can trust your natural doctors because they want to help you naturally. And then you start by feeding the child with the food that builds the brain and calms the body down, and then introducing these activities that focus the brain. And then if you get to the point where you can introduce something like breath awareness with children, that's wonderful. You know, it's not something that happens overnight. And breath awareness, so we can actually start practicing it while we're talking on the phone. I'll just go through the technique because it's so simple. I can explain it quite quickly.
Well, can you define what that word even means? Because a lot of people aren't even sure. Breath awareness, does that mean you know, hey, I'm just sitting here and yeah, I'm breathing, so what, you know?
Okay,
or,
well,
oh gosh,
yeah.
I'm so excited and, you know, my heart is pounding. Well, yeah. Your heart pounding isn't your breath awareness.
Okay. Well, you were mentioning the difficulty. People tell you to sit down and meditate or think of nothing.
Right.
The brain doesn't ever think of nothing. The brain always has to have something to focus on. So understanding that, we give it something and we give it the breath. So that becomes the object of focus. You could focus on a pencil, but it's not quite as profound. So you can focus on the touch of your breath. So let's say you're sitting nice and quietly and you've got a nice straight back. Focus your attention on that tiny spot. It's a pinprick of a spot just below your nostrils, just above your upper lip. It's a very sensitive spot, and it responds when you breathe in. You'll feel the slight touch of air, and it's a little cool. Well, down where you are, it's a little warm. And then when you breathe out, depending on your temperature, your breath is either cooler than the weather outside or warmer, and you feel the warmth of the breath touching that tiny spot. That is key, that your attention zeroes in on the tiniest spot you can possibly feel the breath on. This is the whole technique. This is breath awareness. The Pali name is Anapana. That means breathing in with awareness, breathing out with awareness. So by being aware of the touch of breath, and it has to be the sensation, the tickling, the warmth, the itchy little thing you feel when the breath touches the skin. So those are the two key points to the technique. You feel your natural breathing. You don't change your breathing. It might be shallow. It might be deep. It might be fast. It might be slow. You just watch your breath, however it's occurring. Right now, mine's pretty slow. And then you feel the touch. Now, this becomes your exercise. And it's very difficult to do because we have the habit of staying in our thought part of the mind, our thinking mind. So if you imagine a spotlight, your attention is like this huge spotlight, and you've swing it around away from those thoughts, the ones you were saying cause you worry, cause you concern, cause you're thinking about what to do after those. You swing the attention away from those thoughts and bring it right to that point under your nose. And you'll notice as long as you're feeling, you can't think. Your attention cannot be in two places at once. Now, it goes back and forth pretty quickly, you'll notice, but the longer you can sustain your attention with feeling, in the feeling part of your brain, with every second you can stay there, your attention gets stronger. And then I'll go into all the things that will happen in your body as long as you're focused on the feeling of your breath.
You know what's really interesting is the very first statement that you made, you have to think of something. Your brain will focus on something, or, you know, in other words, every time when they say meditate, they say, clear your mind. Well,
yeah,
my mind's not going to ever
impossible.
Be clear. That's just...
Can't do it.
And once they say it, then, right, it's sort of like saying, don't go down that road, there's construction, and you're like, well, that's where I'm going. You know, it's like, there's just, once you tell me not to do something, I'm going to do it. And then once I've got it in my mind, it's just stuck there. It's sort of like, you just smacked a label on my head that says, clear your mind. Okay, I can't do that. I'm finished. You know, what time is it? Is it time to go? I'm not going to sit here. So, I mean, really, I think the initial thought of saying, you will think of something, just let's think of this, is
such a
grand statement that would shift so many people that are currently trying to meditate and don't even, they're like, this is just not working.
That's right, and that's frustrating. So once you have a focus, and this is called a concentration developing technique, there are other meditation techniques for other things, but this specifically develops your attention. And this is why it's so valuable for children. It should be taught in schools from kindergarten right up through university, and some places in the world do this. And it develops the attention right from day one so that the children grow, their brains grow. And it, as long as you're focusing on your on the touch of the breath, there's amazing things that happen in your body. And they've done now a lot of scientific studies. So people will, usually when they study people, and you know, when they're doing these studies on meditation,
mm-hmm.
generally the people who are the participants are using their breath in some way, and usually they're using some type of breath awareness. They're focusing on their breath. So all the studies being done generally use a similar technique. It could be called different things. It could be adding different things, but they will have this component. And then the scientists have now measured the brain before you start and after you start, and then after you've done it for 5 days, after you've done it for 20 days, for 2 years, 10 years. So now they can tell you, if you practice this exercise every day, for example, one study said, if you practice it for 20 minutes for 5 days, that's not very long, you see brain changes. Your brain actually starts getting bigger in the areas that are responsible for calming yourself down and feeling empathy. And also, they've noticed, even after 5 days, your attention grows stronger. Your cognition is sharper. And while you're doing it, and this can actually be even in the first 10 minutes of working with the technique, because you'll feel immediate results right away, which is lovely. When you're focusing on your breath, your heart rate slows down and your blood pressure comes down. This is a good technique to lower your blood pressure. And you induce what scientists call the relaxation response. And I always like that word because I live in sort of a relaxing world up here and I want to relax. And we all want to relax. So if you practice breath awareness, being aware of your breath, you actually get relaxed. So you don't have to go on a vacation. It's all right there. And what the relaxation response is lowering your heart rate, bringing more oxygen into your blood, which feeds your brain, makes it sharper. It lowers your blood pressure, reduces stress. And how it reduces stress, it changes your brain chemistry. And if you know a little bit about brain science, when you have stress, it's you're reacting to cortisol in your brain, which is your stress hormone. And kids today, they are under a lot of stress. Even though they're kids, they have a lot of cortisol in their brain, and they're constantly trying to get back to their normal state of being calm. But some kids, they just can't do it anymore. They're so stressed out with their environment and their school and the pressures and their diet, they can't get back to normal, and they get into the state of perpetual stress. And as you probably know, because you're a doctor, stress is the key to compromising your health. It will lower your immune system, so you start getting colds, you'll start not being able to fight off viruses, and worse things like cancer will start to grow. So you need to have a good immune system, and stress completely destroys it. And they've done
well,
studies.
With kids, we always talk about stress, and everybody's like, my kid's not stressed. My kid's just active, blah, blah. Well, when I grew up, and we always have to go back because, you know, our grandparents lived until they were in their 90s and 100s. But there's no way that we or our children will be, because without all these interventions, maybe, but without them, probably not. Because when we grew up, I can remember my mother, you know, you just get up in the morning quietly. You didn't have the TV on because, okay, I'm showing my age here, but we had one TV, and it had just come out then, so anyway. But the TVs, you know, the radio was on when you got up in the morning, so music. You got up and you ate breakfast and you walked to school, and you wanted to be there. And it was fun, and you came home and you went outside to play, and you ate dinner and you went to bed. Boom. Simple. And now, as I can say with my kids, I didn't do what parents are doing now. But so with my kids, we got up in the morning, and we were pretty rushed because I needed to go to school or I needed to go to work. I had four kids. I was a single parent. It was like, okay, let's rock and roll, people, you know? Mm-hmm. As soon as that alarm went off, it was like all lights were on, all noise was on to get them going. You know, how fast can you do what you need to do because I'm in the car blowing the horn?
Right.
You know? And then there's other parents now who are like, well, we're not going to do that. We're going to try to have a calm life for our children. Well, mm-hmm. okay, but you're still kind of doing the same things. You may just be altering it a little, but then you're sending your kids to high-pressure schools. They have to perform. You're telling them and giving them telephones so you could text me later where you are and what you're doing. And then we're going, I'll be picking this one up and that one up and dropping you off and you off. And then we'll have to eat on the road because then we have to go to this and the other in the night. And it's like, holy smokes. I mean, I know with my four kids, I said, you each get one thing that you can be in. I can't mm-hmm. do more than that. So that was four things we had to attend to. But mm-hmm. some kids have four things just for them. And how hard that is. And to even say, how do we slow down? Mm-hmm. I know you said in the beginning about, you know, if you do it for 20 minutes every day for 5 days or so. Granted, that's a huge goal where it may take some people years to get to 20 minutes a day.
Right.
But also to remember, you did say, is if you just sit for 1 minute and then 2 minutes and then 3 minutes, mm-hmm. you will build on that. So this is not a technique that you're teaching us that, hey, I'm going to be good to go by next week and my kids are going to be calm and I can pitch the prescription. The answer is no. The answer is that this is something you start building up for a lifetime.
That's right. And the beauty of it is if you sit for 1 minute, you'll feel the relaxation response. Your brain will say, yay, I like this. Let's do it again. Without it, you wanting even to do it again, your brain says, I want it. And it becomes this natural thing that you just want to do. It's kind of like having a cup of coffee, even though it is a chemical and it induces dopamine, that feel-good hormone, meditation becomes your cup of coffee. You do it and you go, hey, I want to do that again. I felt really good. Because what happens is if you go for, challenge yourself for 15 minutes, you enter a space inside yourself that you didn't even know was there. And you think, oh, man, I'm more than I thought I was. I want to go further. I want to learn more about myself. This is cool. And you just naturally get more excited, and you just make time for it. And then you notice all the benefits during the rest of the day. People like you more. You listen
right.
better so that you become a better friend. And the cool thing is when people get mad at you and they start reprimanding you or telling you, oh, you did this bad, you can focus on your breath while they're reprimanding you. This is the coolest thing.
Mm-hmm.
And because you're not reacting to their harsh words, they just don't know what to do. And it's kind of funny because you're supposed to be spewing out all your anger and feeding the fight. But you
Oh, I think
focusing.
The funniest thing.
Okay.
Yes, I do believe that that is true because you know what? I've had that in the past where my kids were just like really just going at it, you know. and I just stood there, and they're like, "Oh, so you're just going to be the silent type today?" And I didn't
yeah.
even say a
word.
Oh,
why
did
you
they
say
not
something?
Like that? Yes, they almost felt like that was defiance in a way.
Yeah, yeah. It gives you so much power, and then of course you have to handle it nicely, so you're not making the other person really furious, and you have to give them something. But at least you're calm. You're not reacting, and then you can make good decisions. You don't have to react. You can say, okay, no, this is what we're going to do. And then you have the power to do the right thing, you know, the right choice. Same with eating. You know, we get so overwhelmed with our emotions, and we feel sad and depressed, and we want something like carbohydrates like pasta or pizza, because that actually creates the dopamine, the feel-good hormone. So we're craving these foods because we don't feel good. Now, if you feel good with doing breath awareness, you start losing weight because you get your dopamine hit, you get that nice good feeling, and you don't look around for substances to produce it artificially. So within just even a week, you'll notice your habits start changing, you don't have the same cravings, and when you do have a craving, instead of just acting on it, you focus inside your body and go, oh man, I feel that craving, it's right in my stomach. Oh, it's sort of in my palms of my hands. And then by observing the sensations connected to your craving, you change your craving. That's the miracle of the brain. Through observation, you change the brain. So anything you want to change, look at it first. That's what humans do best. And just by looking at it, your brain changes. It's all you have to do.
Well, how would you go into a school and introduce this program? And what ages do you find are most adaptable?
Well, I did an experiment through the 90s. For several years, I went to different schools, different grades, and different kinds of schools. I went to schools that had only high potential learners. And then I went to schools that were dealing with children who had been they were involved with drugs and guns and violence, and there was a special school for them. So I tried to do all sorts of different children, like offer this to different children to see how they did.
Mm-hmm.
And although it was maybe a little difficult to connect with the ones who are having real trouble with the law, we did, once they practiced it, it worked. Normal children in normal schools, they just love this. You know, if you introduce it in the right way. And my book that I wrote has a whole chapter on how to introduce it in the schools and how to introduce it to children so it works. And the key is to ask the children, would you like to learn? If you don't want to learn, you can go to the library or do art or do this or do that. You're not forced to do this. And that's the key. If children are going to school, you know, they might like it, but they are being forced to be there. And they have to learn this, they have to study that. And in a way, we're doing a lot of damage to their brains. We're not letting them build up their own initiative, their own curiosity, their own willingness to learn. So when I would come into the classroom, I would say, here's your application and here's what you'll learn. And I give them a nice little introduction. You fill out your application and tell me why you want to be in this class, because it's going to be really hard work. And most of them sign up because it's something different and they get to sit on the floor and do nothing. And a lot of them think, hey, this is cool.
Mm-hmm.
I can sign up and do nothing. And then I introduce it. The first day we do just 2 or 3 minutes, and I follow it with a nice story that sort of explains. My first story is about the puppy dog. You know, you've got this beautiful little puppy dog, but it's just wild and crazy, but you still love it. And that's like your mind. You know, you love your mind, but it does wild and crazy things, so let's train your mind. And then bringing your attention back to the breath when it wanders away is like calling your puppy dog back, just in a gentle, calm, loving way. And we do this for 2 or 3 minutes. Then the next day we go 5 or 10 minutes, and I just work with the class, and we work it up. And we actually work up to about 45 minutes. And
wow.
These classes, there was one in particular. It was a grade 4 class. There was one boy. He was 9-year-old, Josh, and he had severe attention deficit, and he had been on medication for several years. In the beginning, he couldn't even sit for 1 minute. Like, he was all over the place. By the time the 10 days was over, we worked every day and we had the hour, but we worked for a few minutes every day. They had reached their 45-minute goal, including Josh, and when I rang the gong, indicating they could get up and start talking, he still was sitting for 2 more minutes. And the class was going a little bit crazy, but he still sat there. And he learned that despite being labeled attention deficit, he had the ability and power to focus when he wanted to. He had just not been given the right way to focus. He hadn't been given this tool, this breath, you know, focus, focus, focus. He didn't know how to focus. And then he could do it, and he succeeded. And then he must have also felt that beautiful peace inside, which happens after about 20 minutes. So mm-hmm. he had this incredible experience, and no one can tell him now that you can't focus, because he can. So it gave him confidence.
And you know, that's something no one can take away from him either, and it's something that he can do spontaneously wherever he is, too.
That's right. Anywhere. You can do it while you're sitting waiting for the bus. You don't have to close your eyes when you're doing it. You don't want to draw attention to yourself. You can do it while you're a passenger in the car driving along and you've got an hour to get to work. Or you can do it while you're lying in bed, even though the exercise is sitting up straight. Because if you lie in bed, you fall asleep, and a lot of people don't know how to fall asleep, so it really helps you fall asleep. You can do it the moment you wake up in the morning before you get out of bed, 10 minutes, just lie there, feel your breath. It's not easy, but if you do, your whole day unfolds as it should. You know, more peaceful, better decisions, less compulsive eating, and on and on and on.
You know, I think, too, as we get older, 50s, 60s on up, we always seem to have a lot of medical testing going on or medical treatments, and I think that's such a valuable technique to know, because you can just go inside that space through all of that process and not get wrapped up in, hey, this is going to be the end of my life soon, or am I going to get sick, or am I going to have something bad happen to me, and oh, the fear that rises. I think as we get older, you know, fear of life is definitely escalates exponentially, you know, for every year that you're here.
Yeah. And if you have a few moments a day of feeling peaceful, you actually start connecting with that, what a lot of philosophers call that infinite, timeless state. Deepak mm-hmm. Chopra wrote the book, Ageless Body, Timeless Mind. He did breath awareness. All those writers do a type of breath awareness. It connects you with that huge space you have inside that is almost like life itself. And suddenly that fear of dying makes no sense, because you're so connected with all life, like the whole universe. It sounds metaphysical, but it does happen. And this actually just erases the fear. It's a very strange thing how that works. And I think as we get older and all our children are gone and our career might be, you know, closing, we're looking around for purpose in life, because we think, wow, what's my purpose? Why am I waking up in the morning? Right. And if you don't have that internal focus, that experience of yourself, you can go crazy. Like, I know you want to mm-hmm. feel that your main purpose is to experience that deep person you are, and know that you are just as you are enough, and just being connected is purpose, and it fulfills that purpose. And what happens is then you become a more peaceful, generous, empathetic person, and suddenly there's no end of purposes for you, because everybody needs you. Everybody wants to be around you. They want to feel your vibration of peace. They feel healthy when they're in contact with you, and suddenly you're a walking purpose. You know, without even opening your mouth, you have a purpose in life to be the one healthy cell in the organism.
Well, that is such a different concept that everybody has come to become aware of in the past several years, because as we've grown up, everybody has said, you know, you go to school, you go to the next school, you go to the next school. When you're all done with the school, you get your degrees, you have your kids, and it's like this treadmill that you get on. And you look at the weight of the scales, you know, it's a go, go, go to this path where you have your house, your job, and you could say, okay, now I'm, quote, accomplished. And then all of a sudden you hit this tipping point and you're on the downside.
That's right.
But you're on the downside of the material things. You're not on the downside of you. You're actually on the upside of you.
Mm-hmm. Like we live in a very strange time. We have it all figured out up until we're about 55. Like society just functions, click, click, click. Everybody does like what you said. You're on this treadmill. And then after that, it's unless you have a lot of money and you like jet setting to vacation resorts, you do hit this wall. And you go,
right.
Oh, man, I have 40, 50 years left. What am I going to do? You have a whole new life ahead of you. And what you want to do is stay healthy. And there's many ways you can improve your health. But you also want to have that deep inner experience so that with every day it becomes a better life. And this is where we're at. But unfortunately, our house might be gone. We might be divorced. Our children might never want to talk to us again. But
and that is reality. And you know, we laugh and we chuckle, but that is such a reality. I don't think anyone has ever been, you know, ever had that where they could say that they had not been touched by that.
Yeah, it's
everybody has been.
Sad thing. And life presents many, many moments when it's very lots of despair. You know, there's so many terrible things that happen in life, and the only way we're going to survive is to have that calmness inside. So the storms can happen, as you know, down south.
Right.
And you can still feel love. You can still feel peace. And this will keep you going through whatever storm happens externally. And you'll be the anchor. You'll be the one to help the others that are having a hard time dealing with it.
You know, so many times after Katrina, because we stayed for it, Hurricane Katrina, we ended up staying and going right through it because of a medical condition I had at the time, so I was not able to evacuate. But I'm sure it served its purpose all along, because I looked at what was really important anymore. And asking others, I know there's people I walk around and they'll say, well, what are you doing in life? And I'll say, well, you know, I really don't find that that's important. And they're like, you're nuts. You're nuts. Why don't you have a big bank account? Why don't you have 10 brand new cars? Why don't you have this big, huge house and another one? It's like, it's just not important.
No.
As we have learned with Katrina, is that when everything is gone, all that's left is you standing on that corner. And that was us. We stood there with our cell phone, and even our cell phone didn't work. So all of these ideas that, oh, no, this is going to help me and that's going to help me, and it's not really that true. And we can look back at, you know, Hurricane Sandy, when all of those people said, oh, well, Hurricane Katrina happened to the poor people or those people that didn't know or blah, blah, and, you know, all of that negativity for the South people. And now it happened to the Northern people.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we're wealthier, we know better, we have better houses, we have better insurance,
right.
We're going to be fine. And now they're in the exact same positions. They just, that connection that, you know, it can happen to anybody and you will not have anything.
Right.
I mean, government doesn't protect you, other people don't protect you, it's just you when it comes down to the long run. And so many times I say to people, you know, what is storm prevention or what should I be doing? There's a storm going to come. I said, sit down and think. Sit down and just sit with yourself, because that's all that's going to matter in the long run.
That's right.
You know, you can't walk up, you can't take a picture from last Christmas, have a storm now, and turn around and go to your insurance company, you know, after the storm and say, here, you've got, you know, 3 months, I'm waiting.
Mm-hmm.
They're not going to refix your life to what it was.
No.
You've been changed forever.
Yeah.
You know, so... And also this awareness of, you know, yourself is so very important, because, like we said, other things change around you and other things may happen. Well, they're going to happen to you. I mean, you know, a storm, it happens to you. That there's no way to sugarcoat that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's still, it'll make you stronger or it'll make you weaker, but it'll also change you.
Right. The story that you just told is the perfect metaphor for what happens when you do breath awareness. And the key to breath awareness is developing your acceptance to whatever sensation you feel. So you're developing this acceptance to change. And as you're sitting there, and let's say you challenge yourself to sit for a half an hour, your body will feel so irritated, so restless, so...
Right.
But you're sitting there focused on your breath, and you're accepting all this displeasure, all these unpleasant sensations, all the pain, your foot might just be aching, but you've made a decision, I'm not going to get up for 30 minutes exactly. You stay focused on your breath. When those distractions or the pain makes you, sort of your attention focuses more on the pain than your breath, you realize it, oh, I'm focusing on the pain, I'll bring my attention back to my breath. So what you're doing is learning how to deal with pain and accepting it. And then the most wonderful thing happens. It could happen in a minute. It could happen in an hour. But that pain dissolves. It's remarkable, because a lot of the pain is your fear, is your reaction to the pain. And when you're not reacting to the pain, your pain actually, you can't feel it the same anymore. And they've done studies in the lab, in science, and they say meditation helps you manage pain. It doesn't take away the pain, but you don't feel it as much. You can deal with it.
But it also gives you an awareness. I don't know how many times people have come to me and I would ask them questions. Can you explain it to me? Tell me what it's like. When was it? Where was it? What was going on at the time? And they have no clue. They
can't answer anything. Yeah.
You know, because, oh, well, this really hurt. And when this really hurt, you know, I didn't like it, so I called you up to fix it.
That's right.
Whoa. You know, I mean, that's called your car. When your car breaks, you go tell them and they fix it.
Yeah.
I mean, that does not work with a human being. And
no.
Just to know that everybody is going to have pain. You can't avoid it. And honestly, always looking for that answer to stop that might not be the best, because you're really stopping hearing what else is wrong with you.
That's right. And that awareness is key, because once they can identify where the pain is, describe it, even doing that changes it. Your brain changes while you're being aware. My dad was the same. He had a very, very bad life, and in the end, totally unhealthy, very unaware. And when he went to the doctor, I would go with him. The doctor would say, okay, where does it hurt? Well, I don't know. Mm-hmm. It just hurts.
Right.
And so they're totally unaware. But if he could pinpoint it, and I tried to get him to pinpoint it, but it was very difficult. So it is a difficult thing if you have never focused on the sensations of pain before.
And every time you ask them to even sense in, what is it? You know, I always ask clients, I'll say to them, okay, I want you to point to the spot that hurts. Put your finger there. And then I want you to tell me, push a little. Is it the skin? Is it the muscle? Is it deeper? Is it the bone? And it's like, well, let's just pick the piece of anatomy that might be affected. Because how many times...
Where's my leg?
Right. But how many times do people say, I have a really, really bad headache? I mean, I know, because I get migraines. I've had migraines my entire life. And when they start asking you, well, what is it on a 1 to 10? I said, it's 10,000, and you better get out of my way, because I'm really, really in pain.
Right.
And it's like they just can't listen, and they can't comprehend that. And they're like, well, it must be a tension headache or a stress headache. And you're like, I'm going to kick you, you know?
Yeah.
When your head is in that space and trying to explain or define or, you know, believe me, migraine people know it's not my skin. It's not my muscles. It's not my bones. Leave me alone. It's the nerve inside my head. Get it? You know?
Yeah.
But they've narrowed that down. And then looking back, what's contributing to that or not? But so many people can't. They're just like, I got a headache. Give me a drug. And it's like, no. Or when people, you say you have a migraine and they're like, oh, another headache. It's like, no, it's not. I don't know how to explain this. And it's like, you get to the point where you just don't even talk about it anymore.
Right.
So when you can be able to focus on something inside yourself and maybe work on yourself and, you know, just try to know what might or might not be going on.
Mm-hmm.
And how hard that is.
Yeah. If you're practicing the breath awareness technique, so you make a commitment for a certain period of time, you're sitting there, you're focusing on your breath, you can also change your habits and addictions. This is a very powerful helper for people who are addicted to substances and even to things like smoking or drugs. And how it works is, while you're focusing on your breath and you start getting those irritating feelings that usually force you to take a drug or force you to eat a particular food or force you to light up a cigarette, while you're sitting there for the half hour, those sensations will start happening. And like you were saying, if you're not aware of them, they just overpower you and you go do whatever
mm-hmm.
you. So you're becoming aware of the actual sensation connected to your addiction. That whatever it is, it could be pain or fear or a physical sensation. And if you can connect with the underlying cause, the thing that makes you smoke that cigarette, and just observe that awful feeling for a while, you are bringing awareness to your habit pattern that has been unconscious. So next time, it's not that you're going to stop smoking right away, but next time you reach for the cigarette after you've been sitting, instead of just lighting it up without any clue why you're doing it, you will focus for a few seconds on that sensation inside your body. And that few seconds is key to starting to come out of your addiction. So by practicing everyday breath awareness, you will notice during your day that you'll pause before you do something that you're addicted to, even if it's for a split second. And that pause is eventually going to be 4 or 5 seconds, 10 seconds. That is the pause that allows you to make a conscious decision. That's when you can say, oh, no, I will not do that. Without that pause, you're just a robot to the subconscious. So you need to extend that pause. And the more you do breath awareness, this focusing exercise, the longer that little pause will be. And it will come without you even knowing it. It's just a natural phenomenon that happens if you've been training your attention.
Well, you know, Heidi, we have about 3 minutes left. I do think that that is very important with addictions. You know, there is a college here, Tulane University. And, you know, kids in the South, believe me, they smoke like nobody's business. And it's just very common here, and you can do it everywhere you want to. But now this college has said you can't do it on campus. And it is a very large campus. So if you're sitting in class and you've got class after class all day long mm-hmm. and you're a smoker, you used to just go outside the building and then go back in for your next class. Well, now the kids have to go off campus, which could be a 10 or 15 minute walk. And that is going to create all kinds of issues. I mean, those kids are not going to be able to be focused on even classes or anything. And that is going to be a real struggle for some people that have a lot of addictions. So even taking it that far into practice is such a big deal, you know.
Yeah.
So I was wondering if
we only have a few more
minutes
or so, just to let people know if they want to learn this technique, there are two ways. You can go to a course. They're called Vipassana courses. They're all over the world, and they're for free. You can go for the 10 days and learn breath awareness for the first 3 days, and then they have a deeper meditation technique that they teach you after. If that's too much for you, like too... difficult, and this is why I wrote my book. You could get a copy. I have a Kindle version that's very inexpensive, or you can get a copy through Amazon or Barnes & Noble. The book is called Calm, Focus, Joy, The Power of Breath Awareness. And if you can't, you'll find it online, or you can get it through a bookstore. And this book will teach you, in 10 steps, will teach you the technique that I was mentioning, so that you can actually go very deep. So it starts easy, but you can challenge yourself up to 1 hour. So it helps you through every step. Then it also gives you instructions how to teach children, teach you one child or a whole class of children. And it gives some fun stories that you can modify or just get inspired to give your own stories to the children. And then it gives questions and answers at the end. And also feedback, you know, you hear about what the kids went through, and then you'll know that if your students are going through the same experiences, like they'll say, oh, I'm restless, I'm tired, I'm achy, but I love it, you'll know you're on the right track. So please do try breath awareness for 1 minute and see how you feel, and then go from there.
And also on the show page description for today, on the bottom, there is click here to purchase the book. The link goes directly there. And also it's click here to find more information about Heidi. So both of those websites will go directly from the page description on today's show. So you'll be able to find those sites right there. So I'd like to thank you so much for being with us today, Heidi. It's been a real pleasure. And, you know, I think it definitely those two sentences, my biggest take-home was you have to focus on something.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, everything else will still be there when you're finished.
Exactly. That's fantastic. Thank you very much. It was a pleasure.
Thank you so much for being with us. You have a good day.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye. So for everyone that would like more information about Heidi, how to purchase her book, all of that is on the show page. On the bottom, just says click here. And I'd like to thank everyone for being with us today. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher. It's been a wonderful day. Let's hope it'll be a peaceful, calm weather day, but I doubt it. But anyway, we can just sit down and maybe that'd be a great time to just sit there and breathe and chill. I think I'll do that. So I'd like you to have a great day, and until tomorrow, thank you for being with us.